Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome back to another episode of PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host for the evening, Nate Lindberg, and you can find me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. I write the NXT hits and misses, which I unfortunately don't have up for you guys on PWTorch.com for tonight. I've been traveling for work the past couple days, got home right before NXT, and I was like, you know, I don't feel like writing, so I just watched the show like a fan tonight. I'll try to get something up for you guys later on in the week. And here with me on the live report tonight is Bruce Hazelwood.
Everybody, you can find my report on the Torch on the VIP side, fully written up with my thoughts and my analysis. So if you weren't able to check it out or you just want some other people's thoughts, you can go ahead and check that out online right now.
All right, cool. So you guys can check that out, pwtorch.com. If you want to be part of this show, you can always email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Someday I'll get that out without stumbling over it. Or you could give us a call at 515-605-9345 and hit 1 to let me know you guys want to be part of the show. If you do want to be part of the show, otherwise you can just listen live at that number. So let's go ahead and talk about our main event here tonight. We had a fatal four-way for the number one contender for the NXT title to face Carmelo Hayes at the oddly named Spring Break-In. At least there's not two K's in Break-In. I'm happy about that, at least. But we had Duke Hudson versus Grayson Waller versus Dragon Lee versus J.D. McDonough here tonight, Fatal 4-Way, with Grayson Waller going over. In my opinion, I mean, this was like, you know, kind of a standard fatal four-way match, kind of, you know, a little bit chaotic here and there. Everybody kind of got their stuff in, Duke Hudson especially getting some of his stuff in there, especially after his MVP segment tonight with Chase Yu, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But Bruce, let's get some of your thoughts on the main event.
Yeah, it was, as expected, a furiously paced Fatal 4-Way main event. I think, as you were saying, what was notable to me is it seemed like they pretty much evenly split it, 25% of everyone getting their shining spots in, right? So Duke Hudson had his spots, McDonough had his spots, Waller had his spots, Dragon Lee was, I think, the shining star of the match, but not to say that he had more moments than others. I feel like everyone here was pretty evenly split in terms of not just the offense they inflicted, but also the offense they took. So it was, I think what they were trying to tell in that sense is that this is a story, even with Duke Hudson kind of just being thrown in there, I don't think anyone really taking him seriously as a number one contender, that these are actually four people that are very, very close to one another in the rankings and in skill. And it's got to come down to timing and luck, and that's what it came down to tonight. And as soon as Waller was announced for the match, I had a feeling it would be him, because the only other option would be Dragon Lee. But with Carmelo Hayes having just won the title, and the whole issue between him and Breaker for that feud was the being the best of the best, you're not going to have him lose his first title defense. And with Dragon Lee, that's someone where you need to have him win in that kind of, you know, that kind of a match. So I figure this is a good way to just remind fans of who he is. And then I think the route they go is have him win a couple feuds, possibly be the person to dethrone Wesley, so we have a Lee to Lee lineage, and both of my sons are champions in that regard. And then eventually he faces off Hayes and takes it off Hayes when Hayes moves to Raw or Smack built enough for anyone to really take him seriously as a number one contender. And then McDonough is someone who is always there, but never really someone you look at as being the one to take that number one contender spot. If I had to equate him to someone, I guess you could be like a Baron Corbin in a sense, where he's a heel that you can place anywhere, and sometimes that does mean in a number one contender match, but he's generally not going to be winning those types of matches. So it really came down to Waller and Lee. Waller, again, I just felt like not only was he the most obvious choice here, but I don't think I've been any more confident in saying that Waller is going to his last match in NXT will be at Spring Break and in 2 weeks against Carmelo Hayes, because he's going to lose that match. You can't have him go over, especially when he lost two title matches to Braun Breaker, including a gimmick match. So I think he loses here. It's his way to be written off of NXT. And maybe either as a surprise entrant into a Money in the Bank qualifier or after Money in the Bank or something, he makes his debut on Raw. What was I going to say? I really want to put over ease at which Dragon Lee lifted Duke Hudson and slammed him for the sit-out powerbomb, the Batista bomb, basically. It looked like he was picking up a Ziploc bag. It was just seamless for... And when you look at the size differential, Dragon Lee's a bit stocky, but the height difference and all the muscle on Hudson, it's pretty stark just how easily he lifted him and slammed him for that spot.
It honestly reminded me of a video game. Like Rey Mysterio powerbombing Big Show or something, you know?
Oh, yeah, in World Tour back in the day, you know?
Yeah.
But I do like how that spot was just seamless into Waller's rolling stunner. And the whole time I was like, where's Waller? Where's Waller? And I was like, okay, there we go. There it is.
Yeah.
The one other thing I want to note about this match, and we can kind of touch on it going back earlier in the night, but I wonder how much of this match will or won't take away the smugness that Duke Hudson showed tonight, because he was the one that ate the pin. Now, I could also see his character being someone that explains it away as being a fatal four-way match, and if it was just a one-on-one match, he would have won and maybe challenging Waller to a match or something, but he was very, very... I feel like the turn has been set in stone now that it's coming, and it's just a matter of when with how he acted tonight.
Yeah, so with Duke Hudson, I agree, especially where, in that segment earlier where Braun Breaker came out and ended up spearing Andre Chase, like, rather than helping Andre Chase, Duke Hudson grabbed the trophy and ran, you know, so it's little things like that.
The more heelish moments were actually in the locker room afterwards when he kept putting himself over while saying, yeah, you know, thanks for taking one for the team, Dr. Chase or whatever. And
yep,
he's just sitting there talking about how he's going to be the first one to bring gold to chase you and everything. So let's just see where this goes. This is something that months ago happening, and I think now they're finally going with it. So we'll see just how long or how quickly it takes for them for that turn to actually happen. But this might finally lead to the implosion or the dissolution of Chase U. Which, if the three of them are going to go anywhere besides NXT, they need to move on from that.
Oh, no, 100%. 100%. I mean, you know, the Chase U gimmick, I mean, it's gotten over more so than I think it probably should have. I'm here for it. Once it comes to the main roster, I don't think that – if that group goes up together, I think they're going to fall flat on the main roster.
Well, I did say that. It seemed like their gimmick travels a bit because Stand and Deliver crowd was really behind them, but that's also the most hardcore crowd coming out, right? So I guess the big question will be, outside of a big thing like that, does the passion travel with the crowd for them?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say probably Battleground. I almost called it Roadblock because you wanted to call it Roadblock earlier.
Yeah.
Offline, but I think we'll see at Battleground right here in Lowell, Massachusetts. I will be sitting ringside for that. No, not quite ringside. I'm about 10-12 rows back, but I will be there for Battleground. I'm pretty pumped about that. My first NXT show, I think, since 2016. So I'm very excited. But I think that's going to be pretty telling for Chase U at Battleground. As far as Grayson Waller being being kind of the clear winner here tonight, I had a feeling it was going to be Grayson Waller myself. I like was giving it maybe like 70%, maybe even 80% Grayson Waller and like 20% Dragon Lee. But I gave Dragon Lee the 20% for the reasons that you outlined. I felt like Grayson Waller was probably the most it made the most sense, for who was going to win. I could see maybe them giving the win to Duke Hudson with all of the pomp and circumstance he got tonight, but that was like a tiny, tiny little sliver, maybe like a 5% chance there. Just at least the thought I had. The Grayson Waller, I agree with you. I think, and I mean, we keep saying this. We've said this a million times, you know, about him going up to main roster. Anybody going up to main roster. Hell, where's Cameron Grimes, for Christ's sake? But, I mean, what else does he have left to do here? He's not going to beat Carmelo Hayes. And if he does, I'll be – my brain's going to explode. He's not going to beat Carmelo Hayes. What does he have left to do? I feel like it's – he's going to be a good first opponent for Carmelo Hayes, and then he's got to move up. At least it makes the most sense to me. Yeah, I mean, Bron Breakker, I'm kind of surprised to even still see him hanging around down here, though. You know, I'm actually liking what he's doing with his new black attire. Since
Did you know
gone.
He's a heel, Nate?
I know. He's a heel. He's wearing black, you know. So there we go. Apparently, I'm a heel. It's like all I wear, but whatever. All right. So let's Well, I think we've talked enough about the main event. We can probably talk about that some more as the night goes on. Let me go to an email first here. Let me go to Kevin Catani's email. Salutations, gents. I hope this email finds you well. I enjoyed tonight's episode, but was this a taped episode? I thought Grizzly Young Vets got the release from the company. Well, so did Bruce. And honestly, I did too up until earlier this week. It looks like they did request their release, but it wasn't granted. Both Kelly and I saw something earlier in the week that kind of seemed to allude to that. And obviously, they were here on TV tonight. And they're not Grizzled Young Vets. They're the Dyad, Kevin. God. Anyway, he says, that said, I loved seeing Tank Ledger, and I think good things are ahead of him if he keeps working hard. I also love the main event and think that Dragon Lee's stay in NXT is going to be brief. Two thoughts have popped into my head from this episode. How much of Bron Breakker's heel run will we see in NXT, or are they just repackaging him for the call-up? And B, I'm not even mad at Grayson Waller about getting the title shot, but I thought he was on the short list to be called up. Is this his final PLE in NXT? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB and Bonus Point. Office hours are now over. So I just want to read that because it's a lot of what we touched on here already. We didn't really touch on Tank Ledger, but I'm with you there. We'll talk about him when we get to the match a little bit later. And as far as like how much of Bron's run we're going to see on NXT, I'm thinking we're probably going to see it, where they didn't immediately call him up. I think we're going to see him try and get his wings in NXT as a heel for maybe, I'm going to say, spitballing like 3 to 6 months, and then maybe see a call-up for him. But I think they're going to try and see what he can do as a heel down in NXT first. That's at least kind of my gut. Anything on this email, Bruce?
I think it's kind of what Kelly was talking about last week. While he thought Breakker would get called up as or they would call him up and then make him a heel as his debut. It seems like they're going to do a test run, and I think the longest it'll take will be he debuts the Raw for SummerSlam, but there's a chance that it happens before, or they just hold him off. He needs more seasoning, and maybe as a heel, like last week it was Kelly and I, and we were more positive about this heel turn because he was just so stale as a babyface, and this being a heel seems more in line with what he can do with his natural, not to say he's an asshole, but he is
he's abrasive.
He's also a talented athlete who, for a lot of people, those are the people that made their lives miserable in junior high, high school, however you want to term, middle school, junior high. We had junior high up here and middle school, but I went to a junior high, so yeah.
What was the difference?
Middle schools here were 5, 6, or 6, 7, 8, and junior highs were 7, 8, 9.
Ah, okay.
And then
All right. So
the districts that had junior highs had high school that were 10, 11, 12, while the districts that had middle schools or high school were 9, 10, 11, 12.
That's weird. Here in New England, middle school is 5 through 8.
I think maybe it was 5 through 8. It was 6. It was something like that. Maybe it was 5 through 8. I don't know. It could have been. But basically,
Anyway.
Yeah. So I think with his wrestling style, it's easier for him to wrestle as a heel than as a face. So with that being said, I think the longest will be Raw after SummerSlam.
Yeah, I think that's a good prediction. I think it's a good prediction, and it kind of fits into my 3 to 6 month time window too. So there we go. All right, cool. We've got one other email. We'll get to that in a little bit. With that, let's go over to the phone lines. I kind of think I remember this number, but I don't know. Area code 410.
Mm-hmm. You know who it is.
The Reverend.
I do this every week.
Good. Yeah, that's okay. You're getting used to it. That's fine. How y'all doing tonight?
Not too bad. Not too bad. You know, it's funny. I can remember my friends' phone numbers from when I was a little kid, but I see yours every week, and I can never remember. Anyway, Reverend Keith, how are we doing tonight, man?
I'm doing well. I could see the Grayson Waller victory coming. He'll be a good first opponent, as Doc already alluded to, for Carmelo Hayes. And I'm going to make a prediction, and this goes out to D_Effect, who made me laugh that has a problem with me always being right. Well, that got you blocked, pal. But anyway, I'm going to say Carmelo is going to win this match, and I think Grayson Waller will be called up to the main. He's like a glorified Miz. I think we discussed this a few months back. And
The Miz is a glorified Grayson Waller.
Oh, okay. I knew it was somewhere along those lines. You're right, because the Miz.
Grayson Waller's better than the Miz.
I agree, Doc. I do agree. And I'd like to see Grayson Waller go up against Santos Escobar. He's already wrestled Johnny Gargano. I'd like to see him wrestle Chad Gable, to be honest with you, and maybe Ricochet. I think those would be some good matches once he gets called up. Where do you think they would go with Grayson on the main roster?
He's going to Raw, for sure.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. You know, I think it depends on where they're going to want to slot him, and what they kind of have for him right off the bat. Like personally, I feel like Grayson Waller is somebody that needs to come in and just immediately make an impact. He's I just used the word abrasive to describe Bron Breakker, but that's a great word to describe Grayson Waller. You know, he gets under your skin. You love to hate him. I think if he was to debut on the main roster and make some sort of an impact, you know, I don't know if it's maybe, like the IC title or something, but that's going third, so he's a heel. I don't really know off the top of my head, but.
He could attack the Miz during Miz TV.
Yeah, perfect. Something like that, you know, something
and
where.
And then like the Grayson Waller in effect, or the Grayson Waller effect next week or something like that.
Or even just take over the Miz TV segment. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I love that, actually. I love that. Bruce, let me throw it to you then.
Well, I definitely see him on Raw. And I'm not trying, again, every time I bring this up, I just want to reiterate, I'm not trying to disrespect the Miz. He's a 2-time Grand Slam champion. He's going to be a Hall of Famer, as much as that means to people. But that's his career is something a lot of people would take right now because of the success he's had and the money he's made. Like, from where the Miz started to where he is, to where he's gone and is now, even though he's not doing anything, he was still in marquee places during WrestleMania on both nights, right? As much as Shane McMahon thing blew up. So what I just want to remind everyone that I'm not trying to disrespect the Miz here. But Waller, the thing with the Miz is his base was never great in terms of the athleticism needed to be a pro wrestler. Waller is different. He's a trained boxer. He has great footwork because of that. I think the footwork was underrated in pro wrestling. And when you watch Grayson Waller, that boxing footwork and the fluidity he has really comes into play. So the next time you watch a Grayson Waller match, just take a look at how he moves his feet and everything. And you can see how smoothly he moves in the ring. It all comes down to his footwork, really. And I think on the mic, they're comparable. So I do think as a heel, Waller is better because thus far he relies less and less on like the Miz catchphrases, the Miz idioms, all those things. He kind of is still his own character while making it seem more authentically heel than someone just trying to get the cheap heat. So for me, I think his floor is going to be, you know, multi-time mid-card champion, right? I think he definitely is someone who can be a WWE/Universal Champion, however they go about those titles, that no one thought the Miz would. He became a 2-time champion. So with Waller, his ability to talk, his charisma, his ability to – the heat he drew when he entered tonight was only offset, I think, by the pop that – who was it? Dragon Lee got when he first entered. So he's drawing the kind of heat that Dominic Mysterio is basically drawing, and he's doing it NXT. He can do that on the main roster. He's going to be someone that's going to make a lot of money for himself and for the company. So with that, you can't discount him being a top champion as well.
No, yes, I don't think you can. I think he's going to be if Grayson Waller stays on the trajectory that he's been on in NXT, and he's able to just continue to pump out the level of promo that he's able to pump out here in NXT. I agree with you 100%. Keith, let me throw it back to you.
Yes. Moving forward, I would like to discuss the women's division. Now, it was interesting to note that when Cora Jade called out all the women, and they were both baby faces and heels, all the way from Zoe Stark to Indy Hartwell, she named six women, okay? She makes seven, and then the eighth one comes out. So that lets you know there's too much competition for that one title. So therefore, when they have this draft in the upcoming weeks, probably right after Backlash, that week's there, they should bring some of these women up, because there's way too many women to be vying for one title. And then you got the women's tag team division, which is all about the boys' drama. So, what are your thoughts on the direction of the women's title in NXT?
So I think this is the first time in, God, probably a year and a half or so, where I feel like the women's division is finally able to stand on its own again. There was a rebuilding period for quite some time after, NXT 2.0 and the class of women that we had, Candice LeRae, Io Shirai, and everybody that we had. I guess when I first started doing the podcast about 3 years ago, this is the first time I've really felt like the women's division has kind of gotten back to that point. Maybe not exactly back to that point, but because I think that was a very special time in women's wrestling in NXT, but it's getting close. You've got so much talent down there. It's not, and the talents, it's completely a different talent pool and different skills and abilities. It's not nearly, in a way, it's not nearly as polished as the talent pool of old, but you've got a lot of very unique characters. You've got a lot of talent that like you said, could be vying for the top title there. I think this is, like I said, the best that we've seen, the best shape the women's division has been in quite some time. I really liked this promo segment from Cora Jade when she first debuted, and I remember, all of us talking about it when she first debuted, and she's still a babyface. Her promos were very rigid, and they didn't really seem like, she seemed like she was reciting her lines, and that she wasn't really, she wasn't really part of the character, I guess, is kind of what I'm trying to say. Now, tonight, everything she said with conviction. She didn't seem like, she was hesitant or trying to remember lines or anything like that. She went through this entire segment, in my opinion anyway, and really kind of made you believe what she was saying. She's not going to win an Oscar or anything like that, but compared to what she, where she debuted, I definitely got to give her some credit there. Bruce, let me throw it over to you at Cora Jade's segment here.
So I like this promo for the first 3 minutes, and then the last 5 minutes took way too long. It just kept dragging. And I think the most telling indictment of this segment is that when they zoomed in on her while she was being booed and told to shut the F up, you could see the part of the crowd that wasn't saying anything just had their chins in their hand, and they looked really, really bored. And if I was bored recapping it, they must have been really bored watching and listening to it, because I understand the purpose. I mean, this happened recently if you watched Drag Race with Lux Noir London going down the line of everybody, but this just took way too long. And just because of how long it took, Lyra Valkyria got one of the biggest pops of the night when her music hit to interrupt just because the crowd was like, oh, thank you, finally, it's over. Back to Keith's question about the division, right? So, yes, you can do that. You can move some of them during the draft. My only thing is, of the people she named, I would only be comfortable with Zoe Stark and Tiffany Stratton being moved right now or during the draft to Raw or SmackDown. I think every other woman, maybe Lyra Valkyria is the other one, needs a bit more time to develop the WWE style down there in NXT. Now, I also think it's conspicuous with the one woman that Cora Jade did not mention. Do you know who that was, Nate?
Off the top of my head, I don't.
Do you know who it was, Reverend? Well,
I don't think so.
It was Mako Satomura. She did not name Mako.
Oh.
And probably
yeah,
smart on
right.
her part not to name Mako because, Cora Jade's not ready for that. So, look, Cora Jade, like you said, she had conviction. She worked through the chants. She didn't really give them the time to really make a difference with their what chant and the shut the F up things. She tried working straight through it, but it just took too long. It did set up stories with every single woman to feud with Cora Jade, although Valkyria makes sense because, as we've discussed before, the last time we saw Jade was that number one contender's Battle Royal, where she spent so long trying to eliminate Valkyria even after being eliminated, and then it finally worked out for her. But they had that feud coming. They've had that feud to come back to since then, and they even alluded to it last week when Jade was leaving the building. So they'll go there first. And then what I would do, and you brought up the women's tag division, how it's just based around the Henley, James, and Grayson Jensen, even though the champion right now are Fire and Dawn. I mean, you could team a few of these women up to make a more formidable tag team division than what they have right now, because really, I think Carter and Chance are probably going to get moved because we haven't seen them really. And then you have Dawn and Fire, and then Henley and James. And that's about it. So if there's too many women to be competing for the women's championship, the women's NXT championship, then I would try and pair some of them off to make a deeper women's NXT tag team division.
Yeah, it's probably not a bad idea.
We forgot about Ivy Now. We forgot about Ivy Now as well.
Yeah, she just said, though, that in her promo earlier, she's done with Tatum, so now that she's going to help focus the Creed brothers, how I interpret it at least, that she's going to help them get the titles and then go from there. So it seems like they don't have plans for Ivy to be involved in the big ones, and then or at least at the top of the card yet for the women's division, and they might look to put her in another tag team, but we'll see.
Okay. Now, my third and final point of the evening, Carmelo Hayes looked real comfortable, confident. He's settling into his role as NXT men's champion. He looked good. He always sounds good. I think that the fans slowly but surely will get behind he and Trick as baby faces. I know we discussed this last week. Tonight was a true test. I'm really looking forward to his match with Grayson Waller because I think that'll be maybe a 3.5 or 4-star match. But moving forward from Carmelo, the Dragon Lee saga that you guys discussed earlier, if I'm booking this show, okay, I would have Dragon Lee take the title off of Wes Lee and then let him hold that belt for maybe 6 months, then traject towards the heavyweight title, because we all know Dragon Lee is a proven commodity, a proven winner. He's won titles all around the world. I would start him off with the mid title, and then have him be elevated. What are your thoughts on him perhaps capturing the North American title, gentlemen? And thank you so much. God bless you. Have a good week.
All right, Keith, thank you very much as always, my friend. Always good to hear from you. I'd totally be down for something like that. I mean, I personally love the North American title. It's my favorite. Like I'm a belt guy, so like that's my favorite belt in NXT. So I'd love to just see him have the belt because I think it'd be cool to see him hold that physical belt. But I think it's also a great place to start. I mean, right now, Carmelo Hayes with his NXT title reign, it's fledgling. It's brand new. We want to see him have a strong reign. But we also want to see Dragon Lee get elevated. I could certainly see him, you know, having some sort of having a North American title reign. And you could do it with Wes Lee, too, because I don't necessarily think there's any shame in Wes Lee losing to Dragon Lee. I mean, you have some sort of a match where they both respect one another. You build a face versus face match, and I think those two could pull it off pretty well. And then you have Dragon Lee go over, and you know, Wes Lee admits, you know, he was the better man. And Wes Lee goes on to do something else. I don't necessarily think that's going to involve like the main event title scene for Wes Lee. I kind of think I hate to say he might be at a ceiling, but I mean, he may be at a ceiling. But you know, Wes Lee has had a pretty lengthy title reign. One thing that that just came to mind actually is, and they mentioned this tonight, is that he's coming up on a record number of North American title defenses. So knowing the WWE and how much they like records, they may want to have Wes Lee hit that record before taking the title off of him. So if that's the case, you know, it may still be like a month or two before, or maybe a little bit longer even, before we were able to actually get there and move the title to Dragon Lee. But still, like, I don't think that's a bad idea. I think it would definitely give Dragon Lee that, that little shine, and kind of to anybody that doesn't, you know Dragon Lee's body of work. And as, you know, as Reverend Keith said, he is a proven commodity, kind of reinforce that, with the audience that he is a proven commodity. He has the North American title, you know, that was once the A championship, if you recall. So why not? And then eventually, you know, move on to, the North America, move on to the NXT title picture, a little bit down the line. Bruce, let me throw to you.
Yeah, I actually mentioned this earlier about the Lita-Lee lineage for the North American championship.
You did, because you said Lita-Lee lineage and your two sons. That's right. And then I looked up their age just to see how old you were when you were a father, and I was like, oh, damn.
Hey, it's a matter of perspective and soul, Nate. Okay. So my two sons, I did mention this earlier. The thing with Wes Lee too is, I'm not sure if he's reached his ceiling, because he does have one long-standing feud with someone and their manager in NXT still, and that's Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, if you go back to their feud going into Wes Lee winning the North American Championship. So,
yeah, that's true.
You could even take the title off of Wes Lee with Dragon Lee and have Wes Lee come back and be like, I may have lost that title, but remember when you lost the other title? Who was the man who beat you? It was me. So technically the last person to beat you clean was me, and you could just kind of go from there, right? It's pro wrestling, so anything like that can definitely be legitimate, right? But yeah, I think if you go from Lee to Lee and from Hayes to Lee to Lee, you really put over the fact that, and I think, didn't Hayes win it from Roderick Strong in that unification match?
Yes. Yep.
So, and he's also a former North American champion in general, and I can't remember if Strong was cruiserweight champion at the time, or if Hayes was whatever the two were, but still, look at that lineage. You go
Strong was the cruiserweight, yeah.
Okay, so even if you go, like, you think about Strong, though, he was beforehand, so you go down the list, and then you make Dragon Lee the next title holder, you really put over the fact that this is kind of the workhorse title for the men in NXT, what the Intercontinental title used to be before Gunther got it, right? Got it back, so, well, used to be back in the day, like in the 90s, and now Gunther's kind of retaking that mantle. But it's a perfect way for Dragon Lee. You know, I said win some feuds, maybe go Lee to Lee. And if you go Lee to Lee, then you have him win some more feuds. You can go title for title, or you can have him drop it in a multi-person match and come after Hayes. There are plenty of ways you can do this, all of which elevate both of my sons and leaves one of them to challenge Hayes and be the one to take it off Hayes eventually, which might not happen until Standards Deliver next year.
Now, is Keith Lee also one of your sons, or is he like your dad?
He's like my cousin.
Okay. All right. Okay. I was curious.
Yeah.
All right. So, okay, cool. So, let's go to our last email here. This is from, and I hope I'm pronouncing this right. I believe is actually first name emailer, Azan White. So Azan says, one, it's funny how WWE has gotten more out of Damon Campbell. They failed to get his brother off the ground after making him such a big deal. Two, what do you think about Booker T at the broadcast table? Lately, I'll notice that he's gone on weird rants during the show. Three, is Brooks Jensen and Kiana James saga the most underrated story in wrestling right now? From Azan in St. Louis. Have a good one. So
that last line almost makes you want to not answer the email.
I know. I don't want to put anybody's point of view down because I mean, hey, wrestling, you know, wrestling's subjective and for everybody, but, as the Jensen and James saga, I wouldn't say it's necessarily the most underrated story in wrestling. It's definitely
great.
However, it's, I think it has more legs on it, or legs under it, rather, than I thought it was going to. I'm sick of it. Like, I'm ready for it to be done. But I think it actually got more of a response out of a crowd and was able to invoke some emotions out of the audience that, and even out of myself, that I don't think that saga, I keep saying saga, but that story would have when it first happened. So, I'll give him at least a little bit there that it's it might be better than we expected it to be, but I don't know if I would necessarily call it the most underrated story in wrestling right now. Booker T at the broadcast table. Oh, Booker has been going on weird rants for a long time. It's not a lately thing. Booker's he's certainly something at the broadcast table. That's for sure. He's growing on me a little bit. I kind of don't hate him as much on the broadcast booth as I did when he first joined NXT, but I don't know if maybe I'm just getting used to it or what. With Damon Kemp and his brother, like it from and Gable Stevenson, I was blanking on his name for a minute. With Gable Stevenson, I mean, from everything I've been hearing and reading, it's just, he's just not there. It's unfortunate, especially where they made such a big deal out of him, where Damon Kemp has more of the natural ability. It kind of sucks that, you know, he's Damon Kemp in NXT, and they haven't made more of a deal, a big, you know, a deal about him. Cause I feel like Stevenson has a bit more charisma than Kemp in some ways. Kemp also, I think he's also starting to come into his own, especially with this heel character. So he could certainly prove me wrong. Bruce, let me throw to you on the email.
I'll hit Kemp first because you touched on that most recently and Stevenson. I think also with Stevenson, aside from the legal issues, I think he's had a neck injuries that he's been dealing with.
What were the legal issues? I'm not familiar with that off the top of my head.
He was accused of rape while at Minnesota.
Oh.
Rape or sexual assault, one of the two.
Okay, that might be why they're keeping him off TV.
Well, they signed him even after all that was...
Oh, okay. Oh, well,
yeah.
Wow. I'm surprised that flew under my radar then. Okay.
Yeah, well, there's a reason for that. It's because people tried to keep it under the radar for a bit, but there was that. I'm fairly certain that's what it was. I'm gonna double check, but I'm fairly certain that's what it was. But I'm pretty sure also he's been dealing with neck injuries, and because of his neck injuries, he also hasn't been able to do much training.
Okay.
You know, wrestlers do have strong necks, but they also do a lot of stuff on those necks. So having a neck injury that's hurting you right now is not surprising.
Yeah, don't do what Kurt Angle did, kids.
Yeah, and Kemp being, you know, once he turned heel, we saw a lot more of his abilities come out. He was always a fine wrestler in the ring. There just wasn't much personality behind it. But once he turned heel, then we saw some of that. And I think showing him tonight, observing the match, and reminding us that he's there was a good thing for them to do, because you're going to have to reintroduce him sometime. And if it's not directly going for a title, then he needs to have some mid-card feuds that either bring him up the card into a title feud or show him as just a mid-card gatekeeper. There needs to be something more done with him, and I think this is where they're going to show it, because his look was a bit different, his hair, his attire, all that. So we'll see. Now, when it comes to the Henley James, all that stuff, I think you should have really qualified your statement, all right? And I'm not trying to bash on the emailer. I think just to get a sense of maybe you being in the minority is go back, watch this match, and listen to the crowd the entire match. They did not make a single reaction until Brooks Jensen came down and tried to use the bag and was thrown out.
Yeah.
All the hot tags, all those moments, not a single reaction. Nothing. The crowd was quiet the entire time until the very end. So it's not just us on this pod that have been sick of this story for about the last month or so. It's the people in the crowd that they've been catering to every week. They're done with this. They made no reactions to James when she came in on fire and took it to Fire and Dawn. Wow, that was a bit redundant. When she took it to the opponents, and they maintained that apathy until Jensen tried to use the bag and was thrown out. So I think while you may like it, and there are parts of things that everyone likes and don't like, I do think you're in the minority, because the crowd there, who's usually behind a lot of things, was apathetic.
Yeah. You know, it's a sidebar, it's total, but I was telling Bruce and Kelly offline, when I first started NXT tonight, apparently the last thing I watched on YouTube TV, I was watching at 1.25 speed. So I started watching this match, and I'm like, wow, everybody's really laying it in tonight. Like, they're moving. And then I realized, I'm like, oh, yeah, they're moving fast because I'm watching it fast. And then once I slowed it down, I saw exactly what you saw. I mean, even when I had it sped up, I mean, the crowd was dead. The biggest pop was when Jensen came out and, you know, tried to use the bag and push down Briggs. So, you know, yeah, I think you're kind of right on the money there, right on the money. All right.
Oh, thank you. I like being right.
Yeah, yeah. Who doesn't? Who doesn't? You know, I'll certainly let you know when I think you're right. All right, so let's see what else we got here. Let's talk about we talked about the main event. Let's talk about Joe Coffey and Tank Ledger, because we did have Kevin actually mentioned Tank Ledger earlier tonight. So again, we saw Coffey versus Ledger. This was Tank Ledger's debut match. I don't know if he's had a match on Level Up. Actually, he must have, because I looked him up on Cage Match to see if he was an indie guy or, you know, if he's had any other matches. He's brand new, and it did say he had something like six matches, so he might have been on Level Up or you know, Dark Match here and there or something like that. But his debut on NXT TV here tonight, had a pretty decent match with Joe Coffey. I was actually pretty impressed with what I saw. I don't remember seeing anything that made me think, okay, he needs some more work. You know, he definitely
punches.
What's that?
His punches.
Okay, fair. Yep, I'll give you that. I will give you that. But yeah, I mean, overall, I was actually pretty impressed with the guy. You know, both Bruce and I made some comparisons to Joe Coffey. I thought like their styles were similar. You know, and you know, Bruce, and I also thought he kind of looked like Joe Coffey. He's Bruce also, you know, agreed with me there with the appearance, especially kind of like the way Joe Coffey looked back in the day. Yeah, and then after this match, we Schism comes out. We basically see a huge brawl between Schism and Gallus. And I don't know if Ledger was actually involved in that brawl at all. There was all these officials and everything. The Creed brothers, they were in there too. They came out too. Thank you. I knew there were other people in there that I didn't write down. Let me throw it over to you. What'd you think about Ledger's debut?
Well, the my thought that Joe Coffey has slimmed down a bit since he's during his hiatus was confirmed when he came out in his ring gear, because he looked a little more like Tank Ledger does now, a little more stocky, but he definitely has a slimmer waist. Kind of like when Gunther went from being a bit more pudgy to slimming down and having abs. Not that drastic yet, but he's getting there. You could actually see his abs. So this for his first match back, I think they chose someone who was a good option in multiple ways. Like, you want Coffey to win, you know he's going to win. That's fine in this kind of match. But it's also someone that he can lay into with his offense. And who can take it and make it look realistic and then dish it back what he needed to. You said it was a decent match. That's about as far as I'll go. Ledger looked fine for his first televised NXT match. His punches definitely need some work, and I think, like we see with a lot of newcomers in NXT, because it's really their first time they're getting used to it, he catered to the crowd a bit too much, I think, because of the adrenaline rushing. And I feel like better efficient. He could have made more efficient use of his TV and ring time by working the offense, and instead of trying to get the crowd with some taunts and some poses, or just some, you know, like, all that stuff. I do see their potential, or I see what they see in him. Obviously, a big body, he could work. He could be there to take offense and land some hard hitting offense. My big question is though, Tank Ledger, Hank Walker, is there going to be like a bank something else? Like, what are all these Ink and names coming into NXT for with these random white dudes? So that aside, it seems like they might put Hank and Tank into a tag team. Oh, there's your name.
Oh, there
Hank
it is.
Tank.
There it is.
Hank and Tank.
Yep.
Yeah. And maybe with Tank on his side, he can go after Gulak and Dempsey. Maybe they thwart Dempsey next week, or they get Gulak away from the ring next week during the match with Wesley. Something. But I feel like with that backstage interaction they had, it's going to lead to a tag team between the two. Basically, the most recent developmental folk. You could take Dragon Lee out of that, right? But people to kind of train at the PC and come up. And it was notable, I think, that they pointed out that Tank Ledger is the first person to sign an NIL deal, the name, image, and likeness deal with WWE. On that note, it should be highlighted that Haley Cavender twins, they decided to opt out of their final year of basketball at the University of Miami. They also signed an NIL deal with the WWE. They have a lot of other things too, though, so keep an eye on them because they might make their way over to WWE as well. And the place they would go, of course, would be NXT. So NIL stuff going around. First person to sign an NIL deal is already on TV. So I guess that's if you're thinking about signing with WWE, that's kind of a note in the positive side because they got him ready and working within a year maybe. So, yeah, that's good for them and good for him.
All right, let's go to Dragunov versus Von Wagner. So I honestly don't remember if there was any sort of a back build or anything to this particular match, or if this was
Last week, Wagner interrupted Dragunov's promo and challenged him to a match, and Mr. Sun's like, what are you doing? You can't go challenging the Mad Dragon, and then said, if you lose next week, then we're done.
Okay, cool. Because I was trying to figure it out, and I meant to go back through my notes from last week, and I completely forgot. So thank you. Cool. So we saw that match from that was called out from last week here tonight. Ilya Dragunov versus Von Wagner, and we did see Ilya Dragunov pick up the win. Wagner, Mr. Stone did not look pleased whatsoever with Wagner after the match. Ilya Dragunov is incapable of having a bad match, so this certainly wasn't a bad match. I think it may have been one of Von Wagner's better matches. I just have absolutely no interest in seeing Von Wagner at this point. I feel like they're hot and cold on him. They start, they stop, they start, they stop. I don't know who he is and what he's about. And I mean, hell, even Mr. Stone said that. So I guess they know
who
that.
Who is Von Wagner?
Yeah, who is Von Wagner, right? So, you know, I guess they know that. And hopefully, you know, this losing streak that he's on and everything is kind of – there's some sort of a rebirth for Von Wagner here because, man, I just don't care. I do not care about Von Wagner. And, like – I hate to say that because, I mean, like, I kind of like why can't I think of the dude's name, his actual name? I like him.
Cal Bloom,
thank you. Like, I like Cal Bloom, but, like, Von Wagner, I don't like the character. So, I don't know. I don't really know where they're going to go with it from here, but I really hope it is some sort of a rebirth for him that is actually going to equate to, like, Because I feel like what they want for Von Wagner is what Dijak is now. And so how can he be that if there is somebody that's doing it better? You know? So that's I don't know. That's kind of at least my thought process. Let me find out what yours is.
Yeah, we'll get to Dijak later. I just don't care. We can move on.
It's love
Von Wagner, man. It's like, what else do you want me to say? I guess I'll add this. Kelly and I thought that maybe with Braun Breaker's heel turn, Mr. Stone could be his manager after all this. And I think you can use that to drive more heat to Braun, where, one, I think him not talking would help. we'll catch when we get to the MVP segment. But
yeah.
He'll talk and then suddenly just start yelling the last couple of words. So maybe having Mr. Stone as his manager and talking for him wouldn't be the worst thing in the world.
Yeah, give him more like a Brock Lesnar, Paul Heyman type presentation.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like not exactly that because you don't want to replicate it. But
use that model.
But use that model. Exactly. And, you know, I don't hate that. You guys must have talked about that on the roundtable. I wasn't.
It was last week when you weren't on.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I wasn't on last week. Yeah, okay. That makes sense. That makes sense. I like that idea, Mr. Stone, because it would finally be his first like major signing, you know, that's not a failure. So I kind of like that idea, actually. I do. All right, let's move on here. What else we got? We got Tiffany Stratton versus Sol Ruka. Earlier in the night, Sol Ruka and I didn't write it down. Who was it that she was with?
Danny Palmer. The person they said is debuting soon last week.
Yep.
Yeah.
So they were out in the parking lot making TikToks, and apparently the parking lot is owned by Tiffany Stratton, which is, if that's the case, Tiffany, you really got to get some better security. I'm just saying. She was pissed that they were making TikToks in – you know, and didn't ask for her permission. Okay, that's fine. So that turned into a match. That's the backstory for that. This was a really good match, honestly, as far as I'm concerned anyway. I liked the fact both of them have very similar styles, very athletic, gymnastics backgrounds, and they showcased that here tonight. You know, They had a spot where they both kind of, you know, ran the ropes, and then, you know, it looked like one was going to try and flip into the other, but they both flipped past one another. It was cool. It was flashy. It was interesting. And it's not something that we see a lot out of, at least that particular style out of the women anyway in NXT. So I personally liked it, and I think this is also going to try and help. It's going to elevate Sol Ruka. Sol Ruka is a star, and she's kind of, you know, she's viral on the internet. And I think the company also sees something in her. But you know, her real NXT journey hasn't started yet. You know, she's been introduced as a character, but you know, she hasn't really had any major story. I feel like this with Tiffany Stratton might be that first story for her, and putting her with somebody like Stratton who has, I mean, come to be probably one of my favorite characters on NXT right now. I feel like she's somebody that is going to be able to get Sol Ruka over. The two gimmicks are polar opposites, and I feel like Stratton's going to be able to kind of be that super annoying mean girl, if you will, that's going to essentially kind of like take Sol Ruka and make her piss her off, I guess, to kind of try and overcome the mean girl. That's what I'm trying to say. Long story short, I like what we saw here tonight. I like the feud, if this is the direction they're going to go. And I will throw it to Bruce.
I would argue that Ruka's first story was with Zoe Stark, but...
All right. Yeah, okay. I'll give you that.
And then... this is a matchup that we're going to see for years and years on WWE TV. I will note what I wrote was that it didn't seem like there were spots that weren't as smooth as you'd expect, but not in the sense that, oh, they missed a choreographed spot. It was more like it didn't look smooth because they were kind of trying to fight each other to a certain extent, which when you're using gymnastics and stuff, doesn't sound believable as what I just said, but that's how it looked to me. And I think Ruka has a little more fluidity to her movements than Stratton, but I think Stratton, hers works better for right now as it stands for pro wrestling, because I think Ruka is still a bit too... sometimes I feel like it's a little too light for the offense to be a little believable to me, but she's getting there. And, you know, the thing about this match is it really showed us the pecking order and what they think of these two right now, because you're definitely going to have Stratton go over. But what they did in the Zoe Stark feud was they had Stark beat Ruka, then Ruka got her first victory and then lost the rubber match. They could be doing that here, or they could just be using Ruka as a stepping stone for Stratton, because when it comes down to, you know, top challengers right now in the women's division, you have to put her right at the top for Indy Hartwell. And because of that, I'm not sure how much longer you want her to be in a feud that doesn't involve the title. So I think it was interesting that they kept Indy off of the show, even though they talked about her many times. And so that's one of those ways that you can give your title holders a break while also making sure that the fans remember who they are and what they did.
Let's go to Big Body Javi versus Eddie Thorpe. So this is Eddie Thorpe's debut match here in NXT. He's had a couple matches, I believe, on Level Up so far.
No, he had one more match on NXT before this. It was against Miles Bourne.
Oh, yeah. Well, my brain is just – my brain's working on, like, less energy than normal, so forgive me. But you're right. You're absolutely right. But we saw him absolutely wipe the floor with Big Body Javi here tonight. And then we talked a little bit about this earlier when Damon Kemp came out and kind of he stood on the ramp to watch the match and stared Eddie Thorpe down after the match is over. It looks like that's probably the next feud we're going to see for the two of them. Yeah, I mean, as far as the match goes, not really a whole lot to say. It was, you know, Big Body Javi squash match. I like what we've seen so far out of this character, out of the gimmick. And I feel like him and Damon Kemp are probably going to beat the shit out of one another. So I'm here for it. Bruce.
Yeah. Well, Big Body Javi definitely is good at what he does, what his character is supposed to be.
Oh, 100%.
And yeah, so kudos to him, because we all get into things because we want to be at the top and be the best, but sometimes you just got to find your niche. And if this is your niche, it means you're still going to be on TV. You still get mic time, and you still get paid.
If you can be Al Snow, be Al Snow.
Well, and you can still make your holiday albums with Big Body Hobby. So
exactly.
You know, it's why not have that? On a more serious note, when it comes to Eddie Thorpe, I said last week I would use Eddie Thorpe as someone to answer a Wesley Open challenge. Use that match with Wes to get the fans more acquainted with his style, because while we've seen him with Miles Bourne, while we've seen him tonight with Big Body Javi, we haven't seen him in an extended match, right? Both of those matches are kind of short. I think both are sub 5 minutes. Really hard to get a lay of the wrestler when you only get 5 minutes per match, or less than 5 minutes per match. Putting him in with Lee, give him like 15 minutes on a TV main event, or even just top of the hour main event, and really use that time to get over just what they see in Eddie Thorpe. I liked him when he was in New Japan. I don't see myself not liking him moving forward. He has a style I like. He has, from what I can tell, the character can lean toward the stereotypical, but from what I see right now, it's more of his sense of self and identity. So that's good. I think he's someone that can really make a splash in NXT if they give him the chance and they book him into these he doesn't have to win all the feuds right away, but if you book him in these matches and make him competitive, make him look good, then you start planting the seed that this is someone you need to watch out for. And I think that is a better option than kind of just having him middling in these, you know, what amount to enhancement matches. But again, it's just the lack of time. It's not just that we're not going to see a lot of him, but can he work those matches in WWE and NXT that are longer and keep up the pace, keep up the storytelling, keep up the psychology, because it's much different than New Japan. So it's just, those are the things that I want to see, and which is why I think having him go into an open challenge sooner rather than later would be the right option here. Though, a feud with Damon Kemp sounds like fun to me.
Indeed. All right, so our opening match tonight, actually, we already talked about, was James Henley versus Don Fire. We talked about that earlier, with the Reverend.
Make one note of that match. At the very end, after Fire and Don hit their finisher, Fire was grabbing the back of her head after hitting the senton, and Don had to drag her onto the cover, and after that, Fire was still holding the back of her head, and when they tried to stand, she was really woozy, so... Look out for any reports about her being possibly injured on that, or if it was just
really good selling,
a momentary thing. Or I don't know. She had to be dragged. They were in control, and she landed her swanton off the top when Dawn held her in the Codebreaker, Kiana James in the Codebreaker, or Fallon Henley in the Codebreaker, or the Backstabber. What am I talking about? The Backstabber. So I think she landed wrong, and so just keep an eye on that.
Yeah. All right. No. Definitely. Good gig. I didn't pick up on that. So yeah, good call. All right, cool. So those are the matches for tonight. So let's touch on some of the other things that happened on the show. We had a vignette for Noam Dar in the Heritage Cup. I'm pretty excited for that, because I actually have never watched any of the Heritage Cup like tournaments or anything like that. So I'm actually kind of excited to see that, that come to NXT. We had the Chase U MVP award ceremony. We did touch on that a little bit, but, Chase U was honoring Duke Hudson for being the MVP at Stand and Deliver. And then Bron Breakker came out and, he was all dressed in black. So, you know, he's a heel, guys, you know, he's a heel. He interrupted because he wanted to talk about the Fatal 4-Way happening later on in the night. But, you know, I don't know. He probably could have just done that in the opening segment when everybody came out. Oh, actually, I didn't mention that, the opening segment. I'll talk about that in a second. But he could have just come out in the opening segment where everybody else came out. So the opening segment, Carmelo Hayes and Trick Williams, they came out to address the crowd and Bron Breakker, basically say, it kind of addressed the heel turn from last week. He basically said that Bron Breakker was going to be the fourth person in the Fatal 4-Way tonight for the number one contendership. Then we saw Dragon Lee come out and say he's going to win. And then we saw JD McDonough come out and say he's going to win. And then, of course, we see Grace Waller come out and say he's going to win in typical WWE fashion there. Let's see. We also had I'll throw one more thing into this as well. We also had a vignette for Gigi Dolin. I personally loved this vignette, and I think this is the most character development that we've seen for Gigi Dolin in one tiny little vignette. I loved it. We basically touched. She was standing outside of an abandoned home, dilapidated in I don't know if it was in the woods, but it was definitely surrounded by trees, boarded up, graffitied, and she revealed it was the house she grew up in, and talked about her troubled upbringing, and you know, the fact her parents didn't really care for them, and things like that. I like the way it was presented. I like the way it was shot, and I feel like this humanized Gigi Dolin a little bit as well. And to kind of make her a little bit more relatable. Obviously, they're trying to push her as a top face in NXT. So I think this was a good direction to kind of humanize her, and you get her over a little bit more with the audience. So on those segments, we had the Carmelo Hayes, we had the Noam Dar vignette, Chase Universe, the MVP segment, and then Gigi Dolin.
I don't think we need to talk about the opening segment very much. That all came to a head in the main event. Noam Dar's vignette, he just looked like a frat boy, a frat bro, and that's probably what he's going for anyway. Just the cocky, smarmy attitude that we come to associate with frat boys. Chase U segment. So you brought this up earlier, and I mentioned that in the locker room after is where it seemed to be a little more of an indication of Hudson going heel, but or at least turning on Chase U, which I guess would make him heel. But what was notable here is even as he was saying all those arrogant things in the ring, I think, one, Chase was kind of giving him a pass because of saving Chase U by turning on Schizomat, or doing the double turn within the match that lasted about 10 seconds and saving Chase U. But Thea Hale was just jumping all over the place, excited. It just felt like none of the words were hitting her because I felt the oil on my skin from what Duke Hudson was saying. You know, it just was very greasy. And that came, it was even more so in the locker room afterwards. She's just a bit oblivious, which I'm not sure is what you want her character to be. You can still have the passion and all that without her being oblivious. I think it's
to get over the night, like how naive she is though. Like, I was actually kind of like that, honestly.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then the Dolin thing, yeah. I was like, damn, her and her brother look exactly alike. And if they're not twins, then that's really interesting. But I also, you know, I always use the word relatable. You need to make characters relatable for people to not only want to get behind them, but even if they're heels, to understand their motives and who they are, right? And so here, a lot of people have gone through neglectful childhoods they wish they didn't have strained relationships with their parents, if they even have relationships with their parents. So, and how she delivered the lines, I think, is also needing to be addressed because she delivered them. It didn't sound like she was reading from a script. It sounded like she was speaking from her own experiences. And that made it even more relatable. And I wrote in my report that what they've done is make her somebody that the fans want to get behind, which is what they've been trying to do with her. So, you know, one of the lines, I think the line of the night was her saying, I'm a human and I want to be loved just like everybody else. And I
love that line.
I think that is more relatable than anything else anyone has ever said in a wrestling promo, right? If you're a sociopath, you don't understand emotions, right? But humans in general, right? You just want to be loved and be safe and all of that. And basically that's what she said she just wants to be loved, but also that promo was, or that vignette was getting that she wanted to be safe. She wanted to feel comfortable. She wanted to feel secure. And JC Jane is trying to take that away from her. So she all tied it back to what's been going on in NXT. So I think this was a really well done vignette. And I'm excited to see how Gigi Dolin then, her character shifts after this, because I think going into Stand and Deliver still, it was a bit of the residual riding off the high of the breakup with JC Jane. Now we're seeing character development. So really intrigued at where this goes and just how, you know, she was always the one in Toxic Attraction that drew the most cheers. I wonder if with what they're doing with her, if it's enough for her to become women's champion before she leaves NXT.
I think it's possible. I definitely think it's possible. I don't think it's a definite.
It worked for Izzy.
Yeah, but I think it's possible.
Yeah.
100%.
It worked for him. Yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, and to kind of go back a little bit, you know, one of the things you said, you know, was she was talking about her hardships and, you know, it really sounded like it was coming from the heart and you know, it was her own experiences. So she obviously knows what it's like to not be safe and not, you know, not have
not be loved,
you know, not be loved and all of that. So everything that JC Jane's trying to do to, you know, make it so you kind of throw her off her game. She's basically saying, I live it. I experience it. You're basically like Bane. I was born in the dark, you know? And I really liked that. It was kind of, you know, it wasn't said, but there was certainly something that you can infer from it. And I think that also kind of made the promo a bit stronger. I think that was one of my favorite vignettes, probably, I'm going to say of 2023, at least. I really like the way they presented that Gigi Dolan.
Yeah, it was basically, no matter what you do, you can't do anything to me that's worse than what I've already been through, kind of thing.
I don't think I could have said it better myself. That's perfect. Yep. Perfect. All right, cool. So then we saw NXT Anonymous, the 2023 edition of GTV, saw D'Angelo and Stax kidnap Kit Wilson. And then a little bit later on, Kit Wilson wasn't kidnapped and attacked Stax and D'Angelo with Elton Prince while they were talking to Roxanne Perez, trying to become her enforcers, which was weird. Zoe Stark also came into that segment as well to talk to Roxanne Perez. I like the interaction between Stark and Perez. One of the things that, you know, they are kind of addressing is, you know, the reason that she is in Roxanne Perez, you couldn't compete and was out for a little while she was still NXT champion, was due to anxiety. And I like the fact that they're actually just, they're talking about that. And, you know, some people might look at that and be like, oh, that's weak, or, you know, it's, you know, not a good storyline or something. Like, yeah, fine, it's a real life thing, but maybe it's not a good storyline. It's not an entertaining storyline. I just like the fact that they're taking something that can be seriously debilitating, like anxiety, and actually addressing that in a mainstream show. And especially with somebody that was just a champion, I gotta give them credit there, and I hope they do that particular story justice. That was a complete cluster of a segment, so I'm just gonna throw to you on that before and the kidnapping part of it. I'll throw to you before we go to anything else.
Yeah, so I think Perez told, if I remember correctly, she told Stark. You're the reason why people like me need to be open about our anxiety because of Stark being a bully, basically, right?
Yep, 100%. Yeah, that's exactly what she said.
And then Perez walked away. Stax was trying to needle Stark, and that's when Pretty Deadly attacked and really beat the hell out of them. I mean, we laid them out. My issue here is, how are we supposed to think of D'Angelo and Stax? It's a real heel thing to kidnap and abduct somebody and put them in the trunk of your car, but then you're trying to saddle up and help the former women's champion as she's battling through her issues. Yeah. So
it was so weird.
It's kind of like when Carter and Chance are going through their things, where one week they were faces, one week they were heels, and just vacillating between the two. I'm a bit confused as to what I'm supposed to think about Stax and D'Angelo, because they reiterated their desire to Perez to become tag team champion, and then if they're her enforcers, then be alongside her when she regains the women's NXT championship. So I'm just that's what confused me the most about everything going on here is, what is their disposition? Obviously, they're going to have a match with Pretty Deadly probably next week. I don't know if they announced it, but if not next week, the week after, because they already have the triple threat tag title match next week for the men's title. But yeah, just pick a side for them and stick with that side, because you've tried to make them heels, the crowd cheered. You made them faces, they kind of been tepid. You go between the two, what are we supposed to think? Just pick one and go from there. I think being the faces is the way to go for them. But if that's the case, then don't have them abduct people in the parking lot.
Yeah, it was so weird because, you know, obviously you're having them abduct and kidnap somebody in the parking lot. Total heel thing to do. And then you've got them buddying up to the former NXT Women's Champion who's the most face of face that you could possibly face.
Yeah.
So, unless they're trying to do, you know, like pull some two-timing type thing or something like that, I don't know. But That also did stand out to me. But yeah, all right. Anything else, or shall we move on?
Move on.
Okay. So we also had Gallus backstage picking a fight with Tank Ledger, and then Schism comes into the frame, and the Dyad, Grizzled Young Vets. I can't call them Dyad, man. Grizzled Young Vets. They demand a rematch or a match for the NXT tag titles. Then a little while later, we also saw I have it written down. I know I do. Who else? Somebody else. The Creeds also also challenged for the tag titles. Looks like we're going to have a match for that next week. We also had Nile. Ivy Nile requested time and said the Diamond Mine's back to three after dealing with Tatum Paxley. This is where Creed say that they'll eventually beat Gallus now next week and challenge for the titles too. And they also said they'll be out there for Joe Coffey's match. And Stratton comes on screen and says that she's complaining about how she's winning matches, but she's not the number one contender for the NXT title. Then we had the Cora Jade segment. We talked about that. We had Wesley was interviewed and we talked about the record number of title defenses I mentioned earlier. I think that's it. Sorry. We also had one other segment. We had a Scripps vignette where he's supposed to be exposing Axiom somehow, you know what? As much as I hated Reggie, could you go back to being Reggie? Anyway, let me throw to you on all that stuff.
Yeah, a lot to go through real quick on Scripps. I wrote in my report, after getting Golden Ratio the hell out of the air last week, what's even the point of this stuff, right? I just couldn't take him seriously after that.
And, man, that Golden Ratio, that keeps playing in my head. That was such an awesome spot.
Oh, it was perfectly placed, perfectly timed. When it came to the Creed Brothers, it seemed like, because the other team that's in the triple threat next week is Saxon D'Angelo, right? What was the other team that challenged for the title?
Dyad.
Oh, Dyad. Right. They completely dismissed the Dyad. Like, didn't even think of them as competition. And, you know, I think this could be a make good for the Dyad with their release request. But also, think about it this way. Maybe James Drake and Zach Gibson were released, but not Rip Fowler and Jagger Reed. So that's why they're still there.
I don't want to think about that.
The Creed Brothers, I think Julius at times, because he's so confident, how he says his words can come off a bit heelish at times. Brutus was actually the more reasoned one tonight, which is not something you say very often, right? But I think I don't think you take the titles off Gallus right now. I don't think the Creed Brothers need to have the titles again. I think you can just – the thing is, you can move them without Nile, but if you want to keep Nile with them, then she needs to be on NXT a little bit longer to move together, which leaves the Creeds with nothing to do unless they're feuding with another team, right? Maybe something happens in the match and they'll start feuding with Schism, Dyad. I just – even as a make good, I just don't think it's – time for Gallus to lose, especially with Coffey just being reintroduced into the fold. I don't think they lose the tag titles until Coffey challenges for or wins a men's title. So, yeah, we'll go from there.
You just said Coffey so many times. I really want a cup of coffee, but it's almost midnight.
It's 5:50 here.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm not going to make a cup. I'll be up all night. Decaf, but I don't have any. Anyway, that's going to bring us to the end of our show tonight, guys. I'm Nate Lindberg. You can follow me on Twitter at Nate Lindberg. Write the NXT hits and misses for PWTorch.com. Bruce, who are you?
I'm Bruce Lee Hazelwood. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253, and you can also find my report up at the Torch on the VIP side.
All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you next week.